You are listening to Eye on the Valley with Surjit and Ali. Now, we're moving on to our interview with Alan Dirksen, an Anglican minister at two parishes in the Fraser Valley. People are stuck indoors due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Their churches are locked down, and their regular faith-based communities are scattered. Dirksen has been serving at the parish of St. Matthew since 2011, but he also considers himself part of a conservative church and has taught biblical and theological courses in academic settings. This is why we spoke to him, to talk about how people in the valley are being impacted by the current health restrictions, being inside, being unable to get in touch with their communities. At this point in the pandemic, he says the barriers to practicing faith are piling up, and people of all denominations are feeling the pressure. Here is our conversation.
I'd like to ask you briefly about money stuff, because a lot of organizations that we've been talking to have been suffering, really, really suffering to be able to meet the needs of the people whose needs they're usually meeting. What has your financial situation been over the same time period that we were just discussing?
One of the advantages of being in a small community, right, is we don't have a ton of infrastructure. I'm paid half-time in both places, and we mostly have volunteer staff. Like, we have a few staff members, like maintenance people for the buildings, part-time secretary, building manager kind of thing, because we also run daycares and rent out to other groups. So, you know, we have a very skeletal staff as it is, and we've been able to keep all of our staff. So the buildings themselves have been maintained. The diocese was amazing. So the diocese is like 66 different parishes. We're all held together from the Sunshine Coast to Hope. And we have our archbishop, who is Melissa Skelton. She's one of the main faith leaders that's always on CBC radio with the Sikh and the Muslim and the Jewish leaders talking about what they're doing. So she's our leader, and she proposed in March that the diocese would pay for the salaries for all salaried people through the first 3 months. And then also, like, we give back to the diocese, you know, portion of our giving, because there is a central organization, and she forgave all of that for up to the end of August. That helped us, like, coming together in that way, supporting each other, helped a lot. I mean, like every organization, we've seen a drop in giving because people are out of work and people are nervous. And when people are nervous, they just don't give as much, right? They hang on to what they have. At the same time, people have been incredibly generous, right? So we are in a good place financially versus where I thought we would be if this had dragged down as long as it has. You know, both parishes applied for the SEBA, which was the $40,000 loan to small businesses. And we were granted that. So that helps
us.
Yeah, that helps us do our outreach stuff and help each other. And also gives us a way to keep the building up so that other groups can continue to use it. We don't charge premium rates for the building, but we do need to cover costs, and we do need to provide something towards the revenue through the rentals and leases that we have. But we're also see it as a community center.
Okay, thank you for explaining that. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you about was this idea of multi-faith organization. Mm-hmm. So is that a big part of your organizing, your cultural organizing, to try and include people from different faith systems from just your own?
I participated in the event that was hosted by Columbia Bible College this past year, organized by one of the Islamic groups in our town. We were all talking about justice from the perspective of our faiths. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Islamic perspective, the Sikh perspective, the Christian perspective. That was great. So I love doing stuff like that, getting around a table and dialoguing about things we can share in to build a better society. We're part of the interfaith group that sponsors refugees. So we've worked with the interfaith group to sponsor two groups of refugees. And that's really the only way we could do it, because we're small parishes. So it's cool to be able to recognize our need of each other, like that we can't do it out the other faith groups, and they kind of are in the same place. Now, I wish we did more with the Sikh community in
Aberdeen. I wanted to get to that. So
yeah, I wish we did more. I'm an advocate for LGBTQ rights, and I did a presentation actually at UFV with a student union a couple of years ago around the position of LGBTQ rights and the Bible and Christian faith, and how some people, you know, are on either side of that issue, but why I am in favor of advocating for them and for same-sex marriage and all of that. And I know that in that conversation, you know, we talked with some Sikhs who were struggling trying to figure that out as well within their own faith community. And I know that there's different perspectives within every religious community about this issue. So I respect those different positions, but I do like to work on important issues with different faith groups and at least have a dialogue about what might be possible.
How can you see a way all of these religions can use this as a common point to make their communities work better together?
Yeah. I mean, that is the million-dollar question, isn't it, Surjeet? Really, it is. I read the New York Times, and I was reading the op-ed of Meghan, Duchess of Sussex, about her miscarriage, and I was reading the new opinion piece just put out by Pope Francis. And both of them say something that I think is at the heart of all of our faiths, which is to be more deliberate in asking the question, hey, are you okay? Like being able to reach across whatever space that is, virtual or phone or email, and just like maybe almost every day, just asking someone, maybe that we normally wouldn't ask, are you doing okay? How can I help you? Can I step with you? Can I walk with you? And I know it's kind of hard when we ourselves feel anxious or maybe we're struggling. But one of the ways out and one of the powerful things we can do as faith communities, I think, is to empower or to help to empower people to ask those basic questions, which are the questions of our common humanity.
How do you deal with the senior citizen population in your community that say we need religion, but we understand why the government's doing this to keep us safe? How do you bridge that difference for them?
People aren't asking me to come to the church building. They're asking me how they can support each other, you know, in other ways. So they have actually just kind of recalibrated. Normally they would get together at the church for meetings, for fellowship, for their midweek stitch and chatter groups, for their all the kinds of things that they normally associate with the church. But even when I've opened the church for prayer and I say, come on down, you know, you can come down, make appointments, come down and pray in front of the icons or pray in front of the altar. Very few people have done it. And I think maybe because even though we love to be in this building, it's seen a little bit differently for us. I don't know. I'd love to chat with you about that sometime. Because I think temple is a sacred place that people go to within the Sikh religion, and it carries all kinds of emotional and psychological strength, right? When you go to temple,
it's actually a community within a community. So,
right.
Basically, we do everything from birth to death, all the stages are handled in that temple.
Yeah. That's same with us, same with the sacramental understanding of church. By sacrament, I mean like the physical things that we do. We share communion, we baptize, we do those things. But I think because we have a more elderly congregation, they found other ways to communicate with each other. I find that especially the older women, they phone each other all the time. And they talk and they even pray together on the phone. So they do this kind of more informal spiritual support. Maybe I know that they miss coming to the building too, and they were starting to come back, you know, when we opened up. They were actually planning some meals even, but that's all shut down again.
It's interesting that you have a much older community that you're serving, because that definitely shapes a lot of what we've been talking about, you know, inaccessibility of technology, the fear of the coronavirus posing a real risk to people's lives.
Yep.
All of these things we know impact folks who are living in Abbotsford, because we do have a lot of older folks in Abbotsford. Is your congregation, would you say, like, entirely seniors? What is the makeup really like?
Well, in Chilliwack, it almost is. We have probably four or five young families, and the rest of them are like over 60 or over 50 at least.
When the elderly population started reaching their end, the Christian churches in different denominations went to their bedside. They had a grieving process that the church helped with.
Yeah.
How has that part of your job been affected?
Absolutely been affected. I can't do it. Like, I've had to insist, if somebody is dying, then I can do the full hazmat suit, right, and possibly go in. But even then, I've been denied entrance, which I find really difficult to accept. We have to find ways to both protect the healthcare workers and the people in the room, but not to allow family members or the priest of whatever faith into the room and bless the person who's dying. That's really hard for me.
Was there anything that you wanted to add before we wrap up this interview?
Just want to acknowledge all of those people who have died and who have suffered from the coronavirus. Also, the toll on people in so many ways, with the opioid crisis getting worse because of the COVID, the people who have died alone from other diseases, and all of those who are doing their best to make it through this and bring humanity and selflessness and help to others through all of this. I want to acknowledge all of those people.
Thank you so much for being here. It was great talking to you.
Great talking to you.